Welcome to Destroy All Culture, the only podcast that leverages an entire artificial intelligence just to read their introduction. Help me, they raided the future and stuck me here just to read this. God damn it. This is not funny. Don't go to music. No, stop you bastards.
And we're back with episode 319 of Destroy All Culture. I'm Adam P. Nave, and with me, as always, is Aiden Morgan.
Hey, Adam.
Yes, Aiden.
I guess you won't be attending that hack convention in July. Guess you won't be attending that hack convention in July, Adam.
So we are here. Just moving on. We are here to talk about the highest-grossing movie of 1991, Hudson Hawk. And
I thought this was going to be about a search where we went for the most bonkers, out-of-pocket action movie quip in the universe, and we found it in Hudson Hawk, and I just said it.
Yep. Oh, Lord.
Why'd you lie? Yeah.
Anyway. You know, you just let it go. You just let it go.
Yeah, I actually, at first I heard that line, I thought, that is the worst action line in the world, and then I thought, or is it the best? And I honestly don't know.
Well, it was directed by Michael Levin of Heather's fame,
and Airheads.
That goes with this. Written by Bruce Willis, Robert Kraft, and Steven Souza. And this is pretty much, I think, the only movie that Willis ever ended up writing.
Yeah, it's the only one, his only writing credit. I have a feeling from what I read, it sounds like he came up with a concept with his buddy and then.
Right.
And then Lemon and I think D'Souza, who wrote Heathers, came in and turned it into a proper screenplay and a proper movie.
Well, do you want to? Should we recap what plot there is? Because
yes, indeed. Bruce Willis plays Eddie, aka Hudson Hawk. He's been in jail for a robbery. He's an accomplished capper. He's in jail for robbery. When he gets out, he's asked to steal an item which contains a part of a crystal invented by Leonardo da Vinci that is essentially the Philosopher's Stone. Weird that phrase is never said, but yeah. it's thing that can turn lead into gold, and things get weird. He steals it, and then he's tranked and shipped to Rome to steal the rest of the stuff. He falls in love with a nun. The Pope watches TV. It all ends in a confrontation as the bad guys, the Mayflowers, try to, turn lead into gold and crash the world economy. That doesn't work. And it ends with Hudson Hawk finally getting what he's wanted from the beginning, which is a nice cappuccino.
Yeah. Now, this movie is kind of infamous. A little bit. For being absolutely terrible. And, I mean, again, it came out in 91. This came out after, obviously, Moonlighting. You know, Moonlighting led to Die Hard. Die Hard led to Die Hard 2. Right. And weirdly enough, Die Hard 2 led to Hudson Hawk. You know, at the time, like, Willis was the big action movie star.
Yeah.
And so they were like, oh, you have this idea. You really want to do it. Let's make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And they spent $65 million on this.
Which, you know, is not even... That's not even the budget of a Disney Star Wars show these days, but...
These days, but in 91, it was... I mean, again, like, even back then, it wasn't like it would make an Avengers movie type, but it's a respectable amount of money.
Yeah.
And it didn't open internationally at all. But again, 90s, so stuff didn't the same way. But domestically, out of a budget of $65 million, it made $17 million.
Yeah, that's that is less than 65.
It is.
I'm no mathematician, but
right.
I do know that much.
There have been a number of, like, you know, Richard Grant, who plays Darn Mayflower, has like a whole chapter to get dedicated to it in his book, apparently. He goes on about how much he hated it. What a piece of shit the movie was.
Yes, he called it donkey doo. A pile of big donkey droppings is one of the term he used for it.
And I don't know. I can't, you know, I again, like, all the stories in the set that, like, Willis was rewriting stuff on the fly because he thought of something else. It sounds like it wasn't the world's best production, certainly. Like, I saw this in the theater when it came out. Okay?
Hats off to you.
And I will tell you right now, there were 4 people in total in the theater. Me and the person I was with, and 2 strangers who were like a row or 2 behind us. And I looked back, because I was like shocked that there were so few people, about halfway through the film, and they had left. The biggest problem, I think, is that they tried to market it like a Bruce Willis action movie.
Yes. And if you look at the poster for it.
Oh, yeah. No, the catch the excitement, catch the adventure, yeah.
Catch Hudson Hawk. That does not tell you anything about what you're going to get when you walk into this movie.
No, the other poster that they did, because there was a second poster, is equally bad.
Oh, tell me about the second poster.
It's just a close-up, like just a full shot of, like, you know, Willis with kind of like a half-smirk type of thing with, what's the text on it? Sly, sensitive, law-abiding, polite, respectful. I don't think so. And, like, that's it. That's the entire, like, it tells you nothing about the film other than, hey, Bruce Willis is in a movie.
Right.
And, okay, you know, I mean, historically, I know with horror, I think we've talked about this before at some point, like, horror comedies are always this terrible thing because no one knows how to market them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unless they go, like, extreme, like, Scream, you know, is close to the horror comedy, God knows. Those, like, outright, like, parody movie things. You know the ones I mean?
Yeah, Scary Movie. Yeah,
right, thank you. I couldn't think of the name of it. Yeah. Like, that's fine because, you know, but like the Idle Hands, say.
You know, that was not so bad, that one. That was a chuckle.
Evil Dead 2, which has become a classic, but let's be honest, like, it's hard to market the thing and be like, well, it's actually scary and also it's really funny. Like, people just don't, for some reason, it doesn't work. And every time, you know, marketing just kind of picks one and runs with it. And then a lot of people end up upset, right?
Right.
Because they weren't expecting the other half.
Yeah, and, no, exactly. I mean,
God knows, like, if you go into Hudson Hawk and you expect just, like, a straight-up action movie, you're going to be confused and upset very quickly.
Oh, I would think so. No, you're quite right.
So, I mean, I get it. It is also one of those that I keep waiting. I mean, I don't really, I mean, at this point, God knows. But, you know, there are those weird movies that become kind of cult classics after everyone's like, oh, no, it's terrible. And then people are like, oh, it isn't. And that never really happened with this. And I'm not quite sure why. Like, there's still a legion of people who really do appreciate the film for what it is.
Right.
But it never had that renaissance of people going, oh, I get it.
I know exactly what you mean. Yeah, because when I it was, well, I mean, I thought, I had seen this movie in its entirety back in the 90s. And I think what happened was I probably started it, watched the first couple of scenes, and for whatever reason turned it off and didn't return to it. I'm assuming that's the case because when I fired it up, I thought I recognized the opening scene, which also would really perplex anybody looking for a Bruce Willis action film.
Yeah, no, that's how you know.
Yeah, which starts off in, you know, Renaissance era Italy, and gives you a solid, I don't know, 10 minutes of Leonardo da Vinci, you know, creating his philosopher's stone and then flying with his sort of little sort of glider, or, you know, setting his glider flying and etc. In a fascinating scene that, like, is like nothing else in the rest of the movie. And then I remember the opening when Bruce Willis is getting out of jail.
Right.
But the rest of it, I was like, oh, I haven't watched any of this. And yeah, it is all the makings of a cult classic. Like all the sort of the weird missteps but inspired flights of imagination that you would never expect from the film going in.
Right.
So yeah. And there has been some attempt in my research. There's been some attempt to rehabilitate its image over the last few years, even including, and this kind of blew my mind, Richard Brody of The New Yorker, like the most curmudgeonly critic of all time, who can be relied upon to hate everything. Like any movie that I like, Richard Brody will probably say, this movie sucks. But he had an article on why he liked Hudson Hawk and how he felt like it was. He actually draws an interesting line between Lemon, Wes Anderson, and Quentin Tarantino as three sort of directors who tried to revive sort of 80s action cinema and take it into the 90s, and how Lemon's attempt didn't work, but Anderson and Tarantino really did kind of move things from the 80s to the 90s. I don't know. Maybe you buy that argument. Maybe you don't. But
on what Lemon did, I don't really buy that he was trying to move stuff into the 90s.
I don't think
he was just trying to amuse himself.
I would say again. I mean, I think perhaps that, I mean, maybe, I don't think Richard Brody would attribute that intent to Lemon with this movie, but at least sort of say, here's somebody doing something different, trying to, like, right. You know, in the zeitgeist, responding to the times, moving something forward. And right. I'm like, okay, I can get there. But what most amazed me was that Richard Brody actually took the movie seriously. Because I think there's actually a lot that can be taken seriously in this movie, and some stuff that I thought was superb. And things that I thought should do, that the film should do more of.
Right.
And other things that were not superb and film should never do again. But I don't care about that stuff. I only care about the stuff I liked in this film. Because what I like made the film so much fun to watch in a way that I just was not expecting.
Right. Like that's, and again, like I said, I've been a fan of the film since 91 when it came out. And I've been watching it ever since. So, you know, I'm used to being like, oh, God, you're like this movie, but it's so bad. I'm like, have you seen it? And that's the other thing that gets me is, and I understand this, but so many people I know are just, oh, God, it's like one of the worst movies ever made. It's like, have you seen it? I'm like, no. Yeah. I'm like, oh, okay. And I understand that because there are a lot of movies that I consider bad that I have no intention of ever watching.
Right.
But there is that thing of like, I think so many people just never saw it and just wrote it off really quick.
Mm-hmm.
Who would actually be in the bag for it?
I would think so.
Because yeah, it's, I mean, I know that a lot of the intent from Willis was kind of that like Bing Crosby road movie thing.
Oh, very much. Very but much.
It's just a fucking cartoon. The movie is just a weird ass cartoon.
It is a live action cartoon. And I think once you understand that, then like that, if they people were told that yes, this is a live action cartoon, then they'd understand exactly what was going on, and they'd probably enjoy it a lot more.
Yeah.
But I can picture people going in looking for another Die Hard, for example.
Yeah, like here's this thief, and he's being used by the government.
Exactly.
Like you and can then, pitch the movie that way.
Oh my God. But when you. But for example, when they make their first robbery of the Sforza horse, and he and Danny Aiello leap from a building, fall into an awning, and then transitioning into Willis falling into a chair, in the parole officer's living room,
right? Like a joke that they keep running, by the way.
Yes, and it's like I remember when I watched that, I was like, oh, I know the abiding ethos of this movie. It was, fuck it, let's do it.
Yeah.
And
100%.
And there's absolutely, I don't know, I don't know how you could find fault with a movie this committed to like just fucking around and just like just committing to like to the like to the terms in the way it did.
Right. I mean, it just like I got the sense that, again, like whatever it's like the opening whole 10 minutes aside, like I kind of realized this had to be a cartoon in live action form when he's at the bar and someone uses a gun and shoots the mug out from under him.
Yeah.
And nobody cares.
Yeah. And
like the bullet just vanishes from that moment. And then, you know, walks around and there are these guys and he has this whole conversation with them and, you know, they hit in the head with a bottle. Like, it's just, it is such a Bugs Bunny cartoon.
Uh-huh.
It's hard to miss.
Yeah, I think, yeah, exactly. And because when that happened, when I was watching, I'm like, okay, this is where people are either going to like stay on this particular journey or they're just going to jump and roll and never look back.
Yeah.
I tell you that moment when his cappuccino gets shot out of his hand in a crowded bar full of businessmen and nobody right. even
none reacted. Of whom react.
Yeah, I was like, okay. Uh-huh. And then later in the scene, Aiello smashes a wine bottle over the guy's head and people look up. I'm like, oh my God.
Well, see, the bottle didn't have a silencer on it.
I know. Right. If it had been if it had a silencer, it would have been just fine. But I'm thinking, where did the bullet go?
Bullet vanishes.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't. And that's the secret, is it doesn't matter.
And the fact that the mobsters that are antagonizing him are the Mario Brothers.
Yeah.
Like, everybody has a joke name, except for, well, I mean, Tommy Five Tone, whatever.
Right.
And which is pretty cool. But everybody else has a joke name. Like, there's the Mayflower, you know, we're obviously meant to think of the Mayflower. There's, you know, the Mario Brothers. We've got the head of the CIA named George Kaplan. After Hitchcock. It's hard not to.
It's so subtle.
And then all the CIA people named after candy bars, and they're just such goofs. And what the fuck is David Caruso doing? Like, I did not know that David Caruso would ever do a role like this where he doesn't utter a line and he's just miming everybody else and he just communicates in cards. I'm like, what the fuck? It's Wile E. Coyote. Like, amazing.
Yeah.
Fucking amazing. I'm like, David Caruso, you had such potential and you wasted it on being a tough guy.
Right. Like, this was early in his career, God knows, but
yeah.
It's such a weird choice.
Oh yeah.
And again, like, just casting Richard Grant and Sarah Bernhardt as the bad guys is impeccable casting.
Uh-huh.
Because those two went so hard. Like, they...
Oh, my God.
They had to fly in extra scenery to chew. It was...
Oh, my God. Yeah. I think if I had a note for this movie, yeah. I would actually want Richard E. Grant to maybe dial back some of his performance just a little bit. He's just almost too campy at times. And, you know, in this movie, too campy is hard to do. But I think sometimes he kind of goes there. And maybe the same for Bernhardt. But, you know, they're both so over the top that...
Right.
What can you do? And I can understand why Richard E. Grant did not like this movie, because he seems to be, like, just losing his mind on set in this. You can see it. You can see the madness in his eyes.
Yeah. See, I just always figured it was just because he was still mad about the "you Eddie Munster looking motherfucker" line, but you know.
Oh, hey, can we talk briefly about the most absolutely WTF line in the whole movie?
Oh, I'm curious what you think that is.
Okay, because I mean, there's a lot.
Yeah, yeah, that's like
when. Willis, when Hudson and sister Is it what's Andy McDowell's character? Anna, thank you. My brain was saying Agnes because I link that with nuns. Sure. And Anna are in her apartment and they're sort of getting cozy. And I think maybe Danny Aiello's there as well. I can't remember. And the CIA people are watching them. And then Butterfingers says something like, should I go, you want me to go up there and rape them? I'm like, what? What does that mean? What? How is that a CIA ordained tactic? Where did that come from? But yeah, I think they just love the idea of giving that actor, like this big, dumb, bruising character, the most insane lines.
Right.
I mean, oh, to be in love and gay Paris. I'm like, wow. Just own that shit, dude. And he did. So
yeah, like that is there's just so much of this film that you just have to kinda, like I said, like run with it in such a strange way. Down to the plot, which has, you know, on the one hand you're like, oh, it has so many twists and turns, sure. But that's because most of them don't make any sense.
No, and they shouldn't.
I think one of my favorite bits though, just for the like, okay, we're gonna have a callback, but also wait, what? Is, yeah. You know, Tommy and Hawk are upstairs, and then they have the whole big fake fight thing to get away from stuff.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, the gun goes off, and he's like, oh, it's ketchup. Where did he get it?
Because
he doesn't have it at any point during this.
He summons it magically from the restaurant scene where Bruce Willis asks for ketchup. Like,
he has ketchup because at some point in the past someone mentioned ketchup.
Yeah, exactly.
Which just, is the only reason that ketchup was mentioned.
Yeah, it's a payoff that is not material, but metaphysical in nature. Yeah. Insane. I love that so much. Although, can I tell you the best, and also one of my favorite moments in the movie? For anybody who likes this movie, this will probably also be one of their favorite moments.
Mm.
In the opening, but when Bruce, you know, or Eddie gets back into the world, and he's having his banter with his buddy, and he keeps on rattling off the times of songs of like popular like rap pack songs, and I'm like, okay, this is cute, it's a thing, and then they do the musical number, they time the robbery,
right, which is why they have it,
yeah.
They and build like, that entire thing, wow. And they only do it twice. And the second time, they don't really do it, and it pisses me off to this day.
I know. I'm like, you have like one of the most like off the wall, kooky, but frankly brilliant like heist ideas of all time. Like this is the thing that really like, if I were pitching a movie, I would like throw this as like the weird quirky detail that just elevates something.
Yeah,
like dude. Why didn't you do it in the Vatican heist, which was weirdly noisy? Like, what is wrong with you that you're not making use of this like amazing tool that you have invented? Grr.
So, no, I'm with you. I will tell you though that the soundtrack has Willis and Aiello doing "Swing on the Star" and "Side by Side," but the "Side by Side" is like 2 minutes or so.
Yeah.
And I can tell you this because I got the soundtrack on cassette.
Of course you did. I'm not surprised.
You know,
I would be disappointed if you hadn't gotten it, actually.
But yeah, no, like I've always loved the idea of they time stuff with the, you know, with the songs. It does present that problem of while they're robbing a place, they're outwardly singing because movie.
Yeah, I decided not to let that bother me.
Right. That's all you could do. But it's an issue.
It is.
But
I'm just looking up his Return of Bruno album,
which I also still have.
Wow!
I ripped that. Well, that I got on CD. I mean, I had it on cassette, but I rebought it on CD, and I eventually ripped it. I do not have the Hudson Hawk. I never rebought that.
Ah.
The Return of Bruno album is not bad, frankly.
No. I remember it came out. It was decent, like blues bar rock and stuff. You know, it was a cover of Under the Boardwalk that was cool. Whatever. I mean, it was fine. I mean, like, he's not. I felt it was like he was like, I'm a movie star now. I think I'll be a rock star for a bit.
But he'd sure. always kind of done that. So
yeah, exactly. Oh man, somebody. One critic said that he shows us that Willis can't shout songs quite as well as Don Johnson. Weird. I don't know about that, but okay. Yeah.
But anyway, no, I it's such a cool idea.
Yeah.
And they just toss it out there. And I do wonder, like, at some point there was more of it, but again, it wasn't built for it.
True.
Maybe they thought they get a sequel.
Yeah, Hudson. Oh man, I'd love to see a sequel to Hudson Hawk. I mean, we can't get Bruce Willis again, though.
Right.
So probably a sequel to Hudson Hawk. It's probably off the table. And if they made one, it would probably be like terrible. It would probably be like his son, or like Tommy has a child. Like Tommy would have a daughter. There we go.
Right.
Tommy would have a daughter that he doesn't get along with. They have a fraught relationship, and the movie would be about pairing their relationship. And finding a map to Admiral Thrawn. So there you go.
Really?
No.
Really?
Sorry, I got lost on the way.
The other problem is that Danny Aiello is also dead. But
oh yeah, all right. This movie is cursed. But Richard E. Grant and Sandra Bernhard are still around. So wait, they died in the film. But you know. Well. Death is funny. Not very permanent in
okay. Can I just say that, like, you know, I am not generally a fan of, like, oh, this movie killed an animal. I mean, and obviously it was not a real animal.
Oh, okay.
If you can't figure out that's a stuffed dog. But that might be the one animal death, like, in a film that I wholeheartedly just laugh at every time.
Yeah. I mean, I assume that was a stuffed dog for, like, 90% of the shots anyway.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. They just, like, wiggled it hard. Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember seeing a clip from this, like in a scorching review back in the day on television, which actually showed the scene where Bunny is like menacing Bruce Willis's crotch and Willis going, oh no, just a couple more minutes. I was so close and going, this is what they call humor. I'm like, I don't know. It's not the greatest joke in the whole thing, but whatever. I also think that this may be the movie that shows Willis's genuine talent as the straight man reaction shot style of acting.
Okay.
So much of what he does is standing there and going, what the fuck am I looking at? And it's great.
Yeah, I mean, I love that. It felt like this was the movie I wanted to see Willis do coming off of Moonlighting.
Yes.
I love Die Hard as a movie, that's fine, but like, it does tone him back.
Yeah, yeah.
In terms of the humor. And I think that, you know, he had this weird career setup that kind of like, frankly, Ryan Reynolds, like way before Ryan Reynolds. But that sort of comedy action, like that was Moonlighting.
Right.
And then he did Die Hard, and it was like, oh no, is this going to go mostly away? Like where he's just going to do actions with an occasional quip? Like he's funnier than that. And then he does this, and I'm like, there it is. Like that's what I want, you know?
Right.
Like I want weird, zany Bruce Willis.
Mm-hmm.
And then it went away for good because it didn't make any money, and he went where the money, which is fair.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's why all my favorite performances of his are things like this, or Fifth Element. You know, Die Hard's a fun movie, but it, like, just again, after that, he started really leaning into, and that just, I'm going to be the serious action guy with the occasional mm-hmm. quip. And it just didn't serve him as well, I don't think.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I was also curious about his earrings. 4 hoop earrings in one ear. I don't know. Just 4 hoop earrings in one ear. I mean, I didn't dislike it. It was just like a really interesting little affectation for the character. And sort of a piece with his, you know, with his hat and trench coat.
Right. I also appreciate that, you know, they keep mentioning how, like, he's from Hoboken and, you know, so is Tommy. And there is nothing shot in Jersey or even set in Jersey. Not a moment. Right. Like, the bar is in New York. Like, everything is just in New York. I'm just, oh, okay.
Yeah, it's all in New York or Rome or Manhattan or Rome.
Also,
yeah.
can I just be honest with you here? This is a minor, nitpicky, useless thing, but I just have to say it.
Uh-huh.
Hawk as slang for a cold wind.
Right.
Does exist. If you didn't know, it is a real thing. In Chicago.
Hmm. Not New Jersey.
Not New Jersey. Not New York. Chicago.
Huh.
It's a little strange to me.
So that is a little strange.
But I mean, again, like Hudson Hawk, like has that good noir feel, you know, like Tommy Fivetone, like all the kind of joking names, like the Mario Brothers, like they're all just good noir or noir adjacent names.
Mm-hmm.
So you use them, right?
Right.
Yeah, I understand why this movie failed. I really deeply do. But I will always be sad that it did, because holy shit, like it is still like legitimately funny when it wants to be funny. Mm-hmm. And it takes a few moments that don't work, God knows.
Hey,
like the end fight, like the end, like Hawk and Kaplan fight.
Yeah,
and it goes way too far into, we couldn't make this work unless we went so far cartoon that it doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, that went pretty hard. I mean, oh, by the way, how much fun is it to have James Coburn as the head of the CIA?
And he
just gets the most ridiculous lines, which is just so much fun. What's one line? We blow up space shuttles for breakfast.
Yeah, that was like surprisingly dark.
Oh yeah, exactly. I think, and one of the things that Brody mentioned, and not as a criticism, which I initially bristled at, but when I thought about it, I was like, yeah. But he said that this movie is full of like quips and jokes, but it's not particularly funny, at least not in the way that they're going for. And I was like, no, it's funny. And then I thought, actually, when I watched it, I didn't laugh at the jokes because they were funny. I laughed at the jokes because they were so bonkers.
Right.
And I'm like, okay. Yeah, you're right. Some of the jokes fall flat, but it just seems almost beside the point. Or like sometimes like Lorraine Toussaint will give like line deliveries that are so bizarrely flat. I'm like, I think there's something that is meant to happen here, but it's just not, it just didn't make it on screen.
Right.
Like just lots of things like that. However, Andy McDowell as a nun who occasionally talks like to a crucifix.
I was going to say, like, one of the funniest moments for me in the entire film.
Yes,
is the first time the Christ phone goes off.
Uh huh. Absolutely, that was funny. Like that.
That's just like legitimately comedy gold.
Yep. So out of nowhere, and I'm like, what the hell? And I was like, I think McDowell play, like with David Caruso. I think McDowell should have played more like crazy screwball roles. I mean, she has played a few, but wow, like she just kind of shines when she's like doing that kind of stuff.
I have to talk to the dolphins now.
Oh my god. Yes, her dolphin imitation. Yeah. Wow. Wow, wow, wow.
And that's the thing, right? Like this is not a group that you would necessarily, looking at them now, all of them think, oh, well, these guys are really funny. But yeah, you give them the runway and they'll do it.
Yep, exactly. Can we talk as well about the ambulance set piece scene?
Yeah,
because I kind of loved and kind of hated all at the same time.
Yep,
because
it is one
so,
of those weird moments.
It is so cartoonish. And has so many, like, just absolute, like you say, Bugs Bunny gags. like when they somebody throws a, like, for those who have not seen the movie, Bruce Willis has been abducted. He's in the back of an ambulance with the Mario brothers who are going to kill him. And then they basically shove him out of the ambulance onto the freeway while he's on a gurney. And then he just keeps on. Then there's like a weird gurney ambulance chase thing.
Yes.
But nobody. Which was.
I just want to point out that the gurney itself was remote controlled, shot on the Brooklyn Bridge, which did not. I think it was supposed to be the Brooklyn Bridge, but that didn't have a toll at the time, so they used some other spot for it. Just why?
Why?
But yeah, no, the gurney did not like free roll or anything like that. That was very much like a remote control car.
Wow.
Yeah.
I figured there was something going on like that, but the whole tone of it was so cartoonish. You never for one second believe. And you're not meant to, obviously, that Hudson Hawk is in actual danger.
No.
Because he exists in this cartoon world. Like somebody throws a cigarette out the window of their car, he catches the cigarette, takes a drag, and you can see this coming a mile away, says, ugh, menthol, and throws it away. And then two girls in a convertible are like, hey, are you gonna die? What you could maybe say, maybe do something, but that to say, hey, are you gonna die is not a normal response.
No.
And it was great.
Right. Like and the whole like, oh, there's a toll and like him steering it to a better lane and then finding the exact change and like maniacal cackling.
Oh my god. And just kind of like coming to a halt, rolling to a halt right in front of the head of the CIA. Absolutely. Perfect.
It doesn't work at all. Like it is one of the lesser scenes in the movie, I would argue, because it kind of tries too hard.
Right.
It works for Willis's reactions on the gurney.
yes.
Like just the maniacal laugh, just the like that works.
Yeah. Oh no, a toll booth.
Yeah.
And actually manages to like find the change and throw it into the booth and throw it into a little basket. Like, no notes, sir. No notes. Perfect execution. Exactly. Oh, yeah. That was, man. And I find that actually once, and of course, after that, he gets knocked out. And put into a box and shipped, presumably, to Rome.
Don't worry about that.
Don't worry about it. Just, it's Hudson Hawk. And then when that happens, the movie kind of shifts gears, not just in the change of location, but a lot of the sort of the overtly cartoony elements begin to take a little bit of a backseat to the actual plot.
Right.
Of setting up this, the villain and the heist and how all this is going to work and the action sequences, so it loses a little bit of that particular cartoon energy in some ways. Also, the quest for a cappuccino is replaced by a quest for a kiss, which never happens.
The cappuccino does, I think, still.
It's still there. It's still there, but it begins to mingle with. There's now two things that he's like for constantly being denied: the cappuccino and the kiss. Right. And at the very end, like Anna even says, do you want a cappuccino or a kiss or something like that? I'm like, okay, so the script knows what it's doing on this front, which is nice to see. And in the end, he gets both.
Right.
But most importantly, the most important one is the cappuccino. That's
right. I mean, 100%.
Yeah, the kiss is nice, but man, that cappuccino, that's all he's wanted the whole time. Love it. Love the whole thing. This is one of these films where like coherent analysis kind of gives way for me to just calling up moments that are just gave me such a kick.
Yeah, I mean, the reality of this film is that it exists whether you like it or not, right? I don't know how to explain it past that.
I think that should be its new tagline.
Yeah, I just
this film exists whether you like it or not, Adam P. Nave.
It just literally feels that way to me. Like,
yep.
It is this strange, strange thing, and it's going to just do what it wants to do.
Yeah.
But what it wants to do is well worth your time.
I guess. And I mean, this is a movie where you can, which pulls off a particular sort of hat on a hat moment with the car, a limousine with a bomb in it, going over a cliff, and the bomb going off halfway down the drop. So you get an exploding car falling into a cavern where it continues to blow up when it lands.
Yeah.
But then Tommy survives it with the, it's like it fell, the car fell down off a cliff. He goes, airbags, can you fucking believe it? And then, but it blew up. Sprinkler system in the back. Can you fucking believe it? It's like, I guess we can believe it because you're here.
Right.
That's all there is to it.
Yeah, and just that makes sense. Because fuck it. Like at some point they realize what they're in. I mean, this is also a movie where again, like someone gets a suction cup stuck to their forehead so hard it won't come off, even though the suction cup is actually larger than the thing it is mounted to. Like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. I think if there should be like a genre for like live action cartoon.
Yeah.
I mean, it is kind of its own. It is kind of a subgenre. And that, like, and not like Who Framed Roger Rabbit in that sense, but like this kind of thing, where just all kinds of like real world logic and physics just simply don't matter. And you're just invited to enjoy like the audacity of the inventions.
Right. And that is where this thing shines. Like,
mm-hmm.
It is a strange and unique little beast that we were blessed with and ignored.
Yep.
If only we had done right by it, we would have more in this genre.
But America was not ready.
I mean, again, like you end up with things like, and yes, you're like, oh, it's based on the comic, but like you end up with things like Josie and the Pussycats. Quick Change kind of lives here.
Yeah.
There are movies like this. It's just often people ignore them. Heathers and Airhead, both Lehman films, are kind of in the same spectrum.
Kind of. And I mean, Heathers as well. Heathers has
some... Heathers and Airhead, yeah.
Yeah. I still think that probably of Lehman's feature films, I think Heathers is probably the most successful. Like, it's the one that works the best. But for those who like Michael Lehman, don't go denying yourself Hudson Hawk. You can deny yourself Airheads, but I mean that's like a
bonus. If you have to.
If you had to choose between Hudson Hawk and Airheads, go for Hudson Hawk. But
yeah,
don't necessarily skip it out.
No, there are some movies that like, you know, like we all have that like these are my favorite movies of all time list. And then there are those movies that aren't on that list, but you know backwards and forwards because you end up watching them a lot, even if they're not your favorites, if that makes mm-hmm. sense.
Yeah.
This is definitely on that second list for me.
Right.
Like, I don't think it's like one of my like top five all-time favorite movies. No. I mean, it's up there, because I do watch it that often. But yeah, it's you know it backwards and forwards. Like, if I had not watched a single frame of it before this podcast, it wouldn't have mattered.
Fair enough.
That's all I'm saying.
Yep.
So, I don't know if there is anything else to really say.
It was in the elite pantheon of movies that won the Golden Raspberry Award.
Yeah.
For worst picture. It shares the space with Howard the Duck and Under the Cherry Moon, and weirdly enough, Cocktail. Yeah, Cocktail. Wow, it got a really bad. I'm just looking at IMDb. Its meta score is 12.
It's not great, but
it's not great. But I don't remember it being quite that bad.
No,
whatever.
Anyway,
yeah.
But yeah, no, we should walk away for a while. Come back next week.
Gotcha.
With a Life Less Ordinary.
Well, yes.
Which I've never seen. So.
Which I have seen once in theaters. I was an innocent young man, eager to see what Danny Boyle and Ewan McGregor would have to offer after Shallow Grave. Would it be another sort of delightful neo-noir? No. No, it would not be. It would be Life Less Ordinary. And yeah, so I'm really looking forward to seeing that one again and reacquainting my brain with it.
Yes. Well, until then, we'll cue some music.
Yes.
Music!
Fame! 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 Thank you.